Welcome to The Fame Game, the podcast with me, Kimberly Wyatt, who you'll probably know from the Pussycat Dolls.
It's not called The Fame Game.
Yes, it is.
It's called So You've Decided to Become Famous.
Boring.
And me, Max Rogers. As well as being married to said Kimberly Wyatt, I am a model and broadcaster.
Setting the name aside, what we can agree on is this podcast is all about fame. It's fair to say we've both experienced fame in its many forms, the highs and very much the lows. On this podcast, we're not holding back and putting all the cards on the table. We're pulling back the curtain and shining a big old spotlight on this age-old thing we call fame.
This is So You've Decided to Become Famous. And this week, find out what made Kim say this.
And he's like, so what you're going to do is you're going to end up in titty tassels. It's like, no, I'm not. This is The Fame Game. And this week, find out what made Max say this.
People say, I've got a script idea. What should I do? Write it. Are famous people rich? That's what everyone is going to want to know.
Everyone's asking.
How much money do you make?
Yeah.
That's what it is.
It is.
That's why true. We've done this episode, because people will have that question. I remember a friend of ours said, I just assumed everyone on TV was loaded.
False.
False.
False information.
Yeah, it's not true. There's. I mean, you start off with, we work for free, pretty
yeah.
much.
Yeah.
Like for the first long while in your career, if you've got a well-plotted career, you, and we'll get to that, you're working for free. Like I shot the cover of Vogue magazine. It cost me money because I had to fly to New York on my own money to get there. But everyone knows as you're doing it and you're getting on the cover and Steven Meisel's shooting and Carl Templer's styling and Guido's doing hair and Pat McGrath's doing makeup, you know this is going to be the start of your money-making career. So you do it, and that's how it works.
It's crazy, though, that like to start with, you're working for free, but with the top.
The absolute best.
Top people.
Yeah. This is the best you can do. Cover of Italian Vogue, September issue as well. We're not messing around. This is the top, and you're getting paid nothing, and it's costing me to fly there. But you do, because you know that leads to the Hilfiger campaign.
I would still do it. I would still work for free if I could work with those people.
Yeah.
Vogue, give me a call. I'm cheap.
But you did as well. Music videos. You don't get paid for your day on set as a music video, do you? You get paid because the music video ultimately helps sell more records and you get that you get paid through on
that. Well, it was quite funny when having arrived in LA. You know, I came from a gig. I was working on cruise ships, and you make your pretty good money because you're not paying rent, you're not paying for food. Like, so you can pocket a lot of the money that you make on cruise ships. Not enough to move to LA, however. But then once you arrive, you have to be working with the right choreographers so that you're getting booked on the right jobs. You have to be in the mix of those things. But how do you get in the mix? Well, it's working for free. It's doing choreographer's carnival ball. I remember for a while I was doing bar mitzvahs because it was only like guaranteed money. We're gonna bar mitzvah.
Imagine somebody out there's bar mitzvah.
Yes, I was there.
The Pussycat Dolls were dancing that.
No, I, this is me.
But you are a Pussycat
Doll. But even
doll.
When it came to the dolls, yeah, it was the same sort of thing. It was pretty much working for free because it was just a really cool gig to do, and maybe it would end up earning some money. But ultimately, I'm working with some really great people. Really talented people.
And that's the thing. You can start off by, there's certain people that got to that stage, but never actually, that still didn't make it to the career. Like, we're very lucky that it paid off. But there's some people who did these jobs. I mean, maybe not the cover of Vogue and, you know, certain things that we've done. But there will have been people that worked for free, but didn't manage to use that as a platform for whatever reason. So yeah, that's how it starts.
Absolutely. And I mean, you could get some guaranteed money like go dancing at clubs. That was another gig I had. But ultimately, I was working as a telemarketer in LA.
That was a gig I had as well.
What, telemarketing?
No, well, yeah. But the dancing in clubs.
Oh, of course.
That's what you do. You do whatever it takes. We used to host people's parties. We used to host parties for Elton John and people like that with our shirts off. Sorry, Elton. Although I'm sure people
again getting
two
naked
and two together. Yeah. Image. Yeah.
Meanwhile, I'm working at Deep Nightclub, which was made famous from Ocean's 11, the famous scene where Brad Pitt's at the bar and there's the girls dancing in the boxes. That was me.
Yeah.
I was dancing in that box. But I would try and like wrap it into something different. It was like, I'll bring my contemporary ballet sort of thing and give it a bit of this cool vibe. And so part of it was dancing in there. I'd get away with that. But the other part was this like plexiglass box above the dance floor. And it's kind of hard to be vibey and ballerina-esque when people are just looking up at your crotch. That wasn't my favorite place to be. But later, like, the guy that owned the club wasn't having it. He's like, you need to be raunchier or you're gonna have to find a different club to work out. Then he took me to another club and was like, I want you to audition because you're just such an amazing dancer. Did the bit of an audition, really felt quite good about it. And he was like, so what you're going to do is you're going to end up in titty tassels. I was like, no, I'm not. So I didn't move forward.
But what you said there is what we did as well. You sell it to yourself almost that this is, well, I'm contemporary dancing within this. I'm going to bring contemporary dance to a space like this and change the whole world. And that's what we were doing. We were modeling at these parties. We weren't just handing out champagne. We were handing out champagne in a way that's never been done so beautifully before. Because you have unwavering belief, not in yourself. It just is what you are.
Well, and when you're working for free at this point, you're trying to build a career, you're finding these gigs waiting for somebody to show you the money, aren't you?
Yeah.
And you know, hopefully, if
meanwhile,
you're lucky,
you're convincing yourself that this is the job. I'm doing it. Not getting paid, but I'm doing it. And you are. That's what you're doing. But at that stage of your career, the reason why you're doing that is because you're creating a name for yourself and you're building a reputation.
You kind of find your lane, don't you? And you kind of have to try some different gigs to find out what your lane is. Like, I finally found as a dancer. I arrived. Maybe it was going to be contemporary work. I was going to be in a contemporary company or a jazz company or something. But no, strap on the stilettos, put some fishnets on and some amazing hair and makeup. That was my lane. That's when we were like, we want to book her.
Punk Doll is here.
That's right.
And I mean, I guess there's, in terms of money, there's three ways to approach the industry.
Number one,
longevity.
Yes.
Number two, quick cash, in and out. Number three, total reinvention.
Yeah.
Which is easier said than done. It almost doesn't count because it's next to impossible and very rarely successfully achieved by people.
But people have lived, like made longevity out of it, Madonna being one of them.
Yeah.
Questionable choices personally at the minute, but her reinventions of herself has made her career.
Has kept things going. But ultimately that is, you don't realize this when you're in that working for free stage.
No.
You have to get slightly lucky to perhaps meet an agent or a mentor or somebody like that who can help guide you in those early stages, because you don't know. You're being offered a load of cash. I'd get offered a load of cash to do a Marmite commercial. And I think, well, that looks like a lot of cash. I'd love all that cash. And my agent would go, you're not having that cash because we're saving you so that one day you'll do a Vogue cover and then that'll create a 20-year career as opposed to, you know, a year and a half.
And for me, it was just about doing anything and everything so I could finally get to that agency casting call and get an agent on board that could then send me to the better jobs, higher paying jobs, have a bit of support in where to go next.
You can, in that time, make the wrong choices, perhaps overexpose yourself, mm-hmm. and not end up with an option of a longevity career unless you are a master in reinvention.
Well, you know, that's quite interesting because you talk about longevity, but for me, arriving in LA as a dancer, I was always taught that you retire at 27.
Yeah.
So in the way that I approached it, it was like, I'm coming in and breaking things because I want to make as much as I can make happen, because I felt like there was an expiration date on turning 27 years old.
So we had a similar thing. It was like, you have 2 years as a model. Yeah. You have 2 years. It's a 2-year life cycle. I don't know why people used to say that, because it absolutely isn't.
But there's been such longevity in the way that you've earned your money.
Because I've been well managed.
Yeah.
And I haven't taken those Marmite commercials. Now it's fine. Just in case they're listening. But back then you had to plot your course well. You'd get right to the very top of the, I remember the big, big job was the Acqua Di Gio fragrance.
Yeah.
A lot of money, nice long contract. Lars did it for years, did very well. If you'd done, I don't know, as much as a Macy's commercial, which is half decent work, they wouldn't want you because they want you to represent their brand. And that was how it worked for us. And you'd be like, no, but that's the Macy's guy doing the Armani fragrance. It had to be the Armani guy.
I was desperate to do a commercial in LA. I would go to all the casting calls. I really felt like, you know, I had that in me. But it turns out that I'm not all American looking enough. I'm too exotic looking.
You are far too exotic.
I couldn't believe it. Ashley Roberts, all American. That girl could book every commercial.
The irony is, you get mistaken for the same person so often because you look not the same, but similar enough. And yet to the industry, you were completely polar opposites.
And the thing about like those commercials, especially in the States, because it's such a big country, like you book a good commercial, you're making six figures.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. That's how it was.
Yeah, I couldn't get myself to any of them.
So we're back in this stage where, and again, I'm working for free. I remember being in Barcelona, and I've gone there for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, with Danny Kelly. Hi, Danny.
Love you.
And we've just gone there to just sort of pitch, basically. You go out, you meet all the clients, and hopefully you get some work. If you don't, you're coming home having spent a lot of money on flights and accommodation, and you've done nothing. Now, at this stage of my career, I wasn't booking anything. So we spent ages, probably more than a month in Barcelona, just walking around, spending our money on cheeseburgers and not getting anything to the point where I had to fly home, and I was so far overdrawn, I couldn't actually pay to get out of my apartment.
Yeah.
Because I had to settle the bill, and the woman who had the apartment had my passport, and I was like, how am I get, so do I just live on the streets of Barcelona now? And there was about a day where I was sat there thinking, I can't, before, like, you could call, I had a mobile phone, but it would have cost me far too much money to have called my bank back in England. So I can't call anybody. I can't get any money from anywhere. I haven't worked. I can't even get a taxi or I'd have to walk to the airport. I was thinking, how long is it going to take me to walk to the airport? It was about a day. So I was going to do that, but I didn't have my passport. So it's like, do I find the embassy and try and get out of it? It was like 50 euros I needed to settle or something like this. But I was terrified, thinking if I go to her and say I haven't got the money, then she's really going to hold my passport. So how am I going to break into this, to her place, find the safe, break into this? How am I going to do this? I'm just a kid, like, trying to, like, do something.
Yeah.
And I'm stuck there in Barcelona. In the end, it turns out, I walked to my agency and just said, look, I'm in a real bind here. And they went, oh, well, there you go. They just gave me the 50 euros. But for like 3 days, I was sat there like plotting how I'm going to get out of Barcelona, like with no contact for back home or anything like that. It wasn't like it is now where you just text somebody and ask for help.
So scary.
Just in this horrible, the worst thing is I was paying for this room. It didn't even have any windows. It didn't have a proper bed. It was like a little camp bed, single bed. Nowhere to hang clothes or anything like that. And I think it was probably a cleaning cupboard.
Mm.
And I was just living in this cleaning cupboard in the center of this flat in Barcelona with no windows or anything like that. By the way, the entire trip, loving life, because I feel like I'm modeling. I'm a model now. I'm going to meet clients. I'm not working, but going to meet clients is going to do the job. I was up for it. And the fact that I got home from Barcelona meant no harm done.
Oh my God. That, you know what? That does remind me. That's horrific, by the way. You're like at the knife edge of being homeless in
a country I can't speak the lingo of. Like, yeah.
When I first arrived to LA, I lived in a hotel for a couple of weeks trying to figure out where I was going to live, as we touched on. But I ended up meeting this woman, complete stranger, a bit older than me, and she was renting a room. And so I took on the room. I was taking all my luggage and everything into this house, grabbed my sort of envelope of cash. Luckily, as I went in, for some reason, I left my purse in there. And while I was doing it, by the time that I had put my stuff into my bedroom and come back to my car, the car had been broken into and my whole handbag was stolen. Now, this handbag had social security card, birth certificate, credit cards, driver's license, like, everything, my whole life was so, in that bag.
So I was almost homeless in Barcelona. You pretty much don't exist in Los Angeles.
Yeah. And so I ultimately called the police. They came to check it out, had a real chat with me, looked into my credit cards, maxed out. Wow. Already. They'd seen, they'd just gone to all these ATMs and were pulling out cash and then went to like an electronics store and like, yeah, they spent a lot of money on my cards. At this point, I'm living with this stranger. I didn't know her very well. I mean, the one piece of advice she had given me was, you know, she tried to make it as an actress, and that if you're in a position where the casting person or director wants to sleep with you, honey, you just do it. You close your eyes and you just let them do it.
And you've done so well. Thanks. Do you know what I mean? So thanks. So are famous people rich? Not at this point.
Not at this point. Jeez.
But then, so to start with, the answer is no.
No. And I made up a story about getting a job in another state and moved out and lived with three guys. One stripper, one singer, and one dancer.
Brilliant. And that's an upgrade.
I felt much more safe. Yeah,
so there you go. Well done. We chose the career of longevity. You can come in, smash and grab, and it'd be okay. And we see that now on sort of reality television, and the guys who do incredibly well coming off of shows like Love Island and make a bunch of cash in the first couple of years, and then some obviously create longevity. Those who do well quickly.
I guess too, like I was always hoped for longevity, but I always had this expiration date hanging over my head. And I think there was this turning point where I was working for Brian Friedman quite a lot, who was choreographing for Britney Spears at the time. And I just met Robin Anton, who had the Pussycat Dolls. And they're both, Brian wanted to take me on tour of Britney, and Robin wanted me to join this little tiny like burlesque group that was gaining a lot of fame because of their celebrity guests, like, you know, Carmen Electra and loads of other names. And so I had this choice to make of like, do I go smash and grab, you know, do a huge Britney tour, make some good money, don't know what's going to happen after that? Or do I take a real punt on Pussycat Dolls becoming something? I chose Pussycat Dolls. And it did give me some longevity.
And the rest is history. And the longevity now, it's and now you're in a position where you can perhaps choose reality shows and things like that to make a little bit of extra cash if needed. But people are going to ask, because you've done a few reality shows now, haven't you? You didn't do them for a long, long time. People are going to ask.
Well, this is the funny thing, though, about choosing the Pussycat Dolls. Like, ultimately, people think that I'm an absolute millionaire and minted.
Yeah.
It's not true. Yeah, that's not true.
We do okay. We live in a nice
maybe
house.
Maybe I should be, but
we have we both could be, couldn't we? I am about as successful as I could possibly be in my field, but I'm completely the wrong gender.
Yeah.
If I was a girl, we wouldn't be messing around doing podcasts, would we?
We might.
No,
but the money episode would be much different.
The money episode. This would be a different episode. And likewise, you know, you were an employee.
Yeah, we were the first 360 deal done in the music industry, meaning that the label is sort of a partner within it. You know, they're part of everything. They take money from the tours and everything. Whereas previous to that, they pretty much just took money from the album that they would help you make, or at least distribute. So we were the sort of the guinea pigs of this model that now exists in almost every deal that's done within the music industry.
And you didn't get fed so well, did you?
And as well as that, we were signed not just as artists, but also employees. Yeah. So there was a lot of loopholes within that.
Yeah. Not complaining.
Just talking about money.
But talking in terms of money, both of us, had circumstances been slightly different with regards to gender and employee status,
yeah,
we would have done a lot better. But we've done okay because we have plotted a long career and we have made the right choices.
And I think the greatest thing about being a entertainer in this world is residuals. Because you do a job like a commercial, or you make an album and you make music, or you do film or television, you know, like 13 Going on 30 and The Rundown and lots of these films that I do. You know, if they play on different platforms, you still get a residual. Mm-hmm. Some of those films from like 13 Going on 30, like the residuals that come through now is like...
Yeah, half a pence.
Yeah.
For 13 Going on 30, showed on Lifetime on a Saturday night in 3 states of America.
I think this costs them more to send it over.
Yeah, literally the paper costs is more than the actual... Yeah, costs more to cash the check.
But residuals is a beautiful thing as an entertainer. And I think... For most, probably that's where their longevity comes from, is because they've had massive hits, like Missy Elliott. You know, she's had massive hits, so she's going to get a payout every year, potentially for the rest of her life.
Yeah, and you do okay off of those.
All right. It trickles down, they say.
You get a little bit of trickle.
I'll take my trickle.
Yeah, a little bit of trickle. And same with modelling as well. Like if they reuse a campaign, every so often I'll get paid again for the job if they've reused it in a different territory, or if they've taken longer time, or now it's in magazines as well as on billboards. You get paid again. That is the joy of this job. Little surprises for doing nothing at all.
So let's do some listener questions.
Okay.
All right. This one's from Morella. Love Morella.
Oh, hello, Morella.
Yes. Lots of love to you. Is it necessary to have someone take care of financials?
Yes.
Well, for you, it hasn't
always.
For me,
no. For you, yes.
For me, it's extremely important.
Yeah. Yours is way more complicated.
So complicated.
Yeah. With all the residuals and all that sort of stuff. I have an agent that does sort of everything, takes care of all of it. Commissions are a fun thing to have to pay, but I don't mind paying the percentages that I pay in England because they do take care of all accounting.
But can we just touch on how much of a percentage the agent takes in France?
75%.
When you told me that the first time, I just about died.
That's why I don't work there. Like, in order for them to... My French agent will call up all the time and be like, hey, we've got this job. I'm like, how much is it for? And I'm like, well, it has to be a lot more than that for it to be even pay my travel. They want me to do it. Of course they do, 75%. But yeah, that's just, it just doesn't work for me.
In music, I think it's so important because you've got publishing and there's all these different companies that take care of it. And they kind of have to pull from all these different places and you have all the different territories around the world. Like, I'm good at a lot of things, but numbers is not my bag.
No, it's very, very complex.
And it's very complex. And being an American living in the UK, like, I still have to have status in two countries and the tax implications of that.
Aaron LB Performing says, how can I be a musician, artist, performer? I'll answer this really quickly and really concisely. Make music, create art, and perform.
It's a whole new world, though. Previously, you could just start doing showcases, doing shows around, invite the right people, be seen by the right A&R guy. You could be then put into it's sort of an artist support sort of thing. They would have at a label to help you then become the artist that they can sell. Then the label would pretty much almost do everything, label and manager. You're good to go. Now, labels expect you to pretty much have everything going for you, have loads of followers, get your Spotify account going. Like, you have to do most of the legwork to then even be considered for what comes next.
But I would bring it back to make music, create art, and perform. And that's what you have to do to become
those
things.
Not anymore, babe. You have to be...
If you don't... People often ask this question... And I'm like, well, you got to do it. People say, how do I, I've got a script idea. What should I do? Write it. Write the script. That's the first.
But it's almost now a small part of how you actually make it happen.
Well, sharing it is a lot easier than it used to be in terms of you sitting in your bedroom. You can make yourself a platform via YouTube or via all those things. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it takes a hell of a lot of work and persistence and a break here and there, and eventually you might start to find somebody who can help guide your career to longevity rather than a flash in the pan.
Yeah.
But the first key is to just keep making. I know lots of people that are really, really talented that never actually made.
But there's making and there's pushing. And pushing is a huge part of it.
Yeah.
Putting yourself out there, getting eyeballs on what it is that you've made is so,
make,
important.
Then push.
Yeah.
And there are platforms available for you to be able to do those things.
And if you, like, if that's your dream, then you, and you feel like you can't not do it, then you're in the right space and never give up on yourself. But if there's even an inkling of doubt, maybe you should look at doing something else.
Yeah.
Because it's going to take full commitment and a lot of knockbacks.
Full commitment on the days where it's going horrendously wrong.
Yeah.
And you don't feel like you've got anything.
I like this question. Lizelli's Art, I think it is. I really like your page on Insta. Thank you very much. What's your money mindset? I like this question.
Okay.
You go first.
Okay.
What's your money mindset?
My money mindset is that I understand it's important. I've got one actually that links into this. Gary Wolf, who I went to school with. Hello, Gary. You're right, mate. He says, when you have a lot of it in terms of money and fame, you realize it's not important. I understand where you're going with that. But my money mindset is that it is important to create a foundation to be able to do more important things. So money is not everything. It's not the most important thing in the world. But we've become aware in our life that without it, you really are tied. So you have to do enough to get enough to be able to do the things that you really want to do. And then as soon as you've got enough, you have to focus on other things. And that is currently easier said than done for a lot of people. But to say it's not important is, in my experience, incorrect. Not the most important thing, though. That's my money mindset.
Oh, but I mean, everything changes once you have kids, isn't it? Because you become a provider. And, you know, I think previous to the mindset, it, like, things didn't matter as much. You could be malleable and a bit more liquid in how you live your life. Whereas now you have to sort of future-proof yourself. And for us, for me, it's about having lines in the water that are potential money makers, because you can't put all your balls in one cup. Is that how the expression goes?
Join us next week where we'll be talking about anything else.
All your eggs in one basket. I, like, if I still was just like fully dance focused, I wouldn't be making any money. Like a lot of the times when it's my dance gigs that I'm super passionate about, it's like a passion project, I'm funding those gigs. I'm creating those gigs. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, for me to make money, I have to look at other possible endeavors, which has been, in a way, a big blessing because it's helped me then focus into transferring to acting, which doesn't make a lot of money either. But I think it will at one point.
We've talked loads about where we don't make money.
Where do we make money, babe?
We're okay, right? Okay. So let's talk about, like, I have a question, especially but back to Pussycat Dolls. When did the money start? When did you make money? When did you start making money? Like, there's the story. I want to ask you a story about it. Yep, fair enough. We know you sell records. We know you sell out tours. We know that. We know that you get residuals and all that kind of stuff. Where's the money that people don't see?
Well, you're always waiting for the big gigs, aren't you? And money does talk. And there was a time when we were booked for a big sort of corporate gig.
See, this is
a private event.
Corporate gigs.
Corporate gigs.
That's a whole thing
money
that the public
artists
don't see.
Yes, I see what you mean.
But there's money. I was trying to very gently segue from what we don't make to what we
felt
do
like
make.
I was on a quiz show there for
yeah,
a second.
Yeah, and you got it all wrong.
Well,
but here we are. Segued now in a most brutal fashion.
Right. So
corporate gigs.
Corporate gigs. Yes, we're on tour. Yeah. But do you think people are ready for this story?
No. Are we ready for this story? No. This could end everything, not just our careers.
I feel like I've got big balls
Can we maybe beep out any offending names or anything like that from this? We could do that, couldn't
offending?
We?
Offending?
Just to be...
Is it offensive? Trying to make that cheddar. At one point, we were backstage getting ready for a show or right after, and this guy showed up, and he was representative of a big private event that we had been booked to do. However, we were not allowed to know who it was for. That was one of the stipulations. So he comes with Cartier watches and diamond rings.
That's the Cartier B.
Yeah, Cartier. And all sorts. So, you know, our eyes are glistening like, this is the coolest thing ever. Look at all these lavish gifts. Still confused about what this, you know, this private event is. It comes to the date. We still don't know who we're performing for. We get on the private jet, head over to south of France, land, get in the stretch Hummer limo to go across the street, go up to this villa dripping in gold. So all the details in this house were gold. The pool, not just water, filled with Evian water.
There's a lot of favorite things about this story, but my favorite thing is that the world don't know this happened.
Yeah.
Like this was happening with the Pussycat Dolls that we know. You were on tour at the time.
Yeah.
And then these little things are getting sneaked in.
Little nugget.
Little moneymakers.
Yeah. So then there's this woman that's sort of greeted us. She's taking good care of us, showing all these swimsuits and things. You know, do we want a swimsuit? I was like, no, thank you.
I'm punk doll.
Yeah, I'm punk doll. I'll take a triangle top and a mohawk. Thank you very much. And we're still like so confused, asking the manager, you know, who we're performing for. So he doesn't even know. He's not allowed to know till I think however close to the beginning of this show. Ash and I being best mates, we realized, like, you know, the party has started at this point. We're pretty much ready to go, but still in our, like, sort of down clothes, not in costume yet. And we can hear helicopters overhead. There's, like, searchlights going around. Like, what have we got ourselves into?
You have no idea at this point where you are, what you're doing.
Well, we know
why
we're in south
there
of France.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's about
but
it.
But you were, a minute ago, you were on tour.
Yeah, yeah.
And now you're here.
So her and I decide to go out into the party and mingle and see, you know, who it is we're performing for. So we go out. And there are a lot of beautiful Italian men hanging about. And we go to the bar and get a drink. And the women there were so tall, so beautiful, showing off a lot of their assets. And we could tell they weren't too happy to see us, these girls. And we were still so confused why. So then we go backstage. It's, you know, it's showtime now. We find out right before we go that the person we are performing for is the son of a very well-known
dictator.
Yes. So we go out on stage. I'll be honest, at that point, I didn't know who that was. I didn't know who it was.
The rest of the world did, but yeah, fair enough.
I mean, this is pre, like, you know, his height of fame.
Pre-knowledge.
I don't know.
His big hits came later, apparently.
He's still working his way up the fame game.
No, he was still working for free, doing editorials and music videos.
So his son, like, there's, you know, it wasn't the biggest party ever, but they were all, like, so far away from the stage, but the son brings a chair and is sitting, like, right at the, like, front of the stage. So it felt a bit weird anyway. But we get through the show, and in the middle of the show, we have the section, show us what you got. We usually bring people on stage
PCD
and they dance.
PCD fans will
and,
remember.
Yeah, you will. Show us what you got. So a lot of the Russian beautiful, amazing women decide to come up to do this section.
They showed you what they got.
Oh my God, did they show us? They showed us everything. Titties are popping out. Everything was popping out. The thing was, the song was ending, but they were not leaving the stage. So it was a real weird, like, how do we, you know, lovingly
finish our show?
Finish our show. Time's up.
For these people that...
So they did end up getting off stage. I think we just moved to the next song and just hoped that they would get the hint as we continued as our group fearsomeness. We were told that, you know, part of the gig was going to the after party. That was part of what we were supposed to do. The booking.
Yeah.
So go to the after party. I've never seen so much Cristal shaken and sprayed everywhere in my life. Like the big, huge tier of glasses where you pour it in the top and it just trickles down to all the glasses. Just like money, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there was a point within this party. So I think we're all so exhausted at this point. I'm speaking to one of the guys and he's like, you know, come back to my hotel room. I was like, no, mate, like we haven't even conversed. I don't even know who you are. And it comes out he was in a very well-known
team.
So he's making his comments. Well, when will I ever see you again? I was like, well, on television. Really nice to meet you.
What did you think you were, babe?
Oh, God. So then I'm looking at this party and all these women. I can see the woman that we had met in the beginning of the night is sort of pointing to these gorgeous women and sort of pointing to the middle of the dance floor and sort of...
What do you think she was, babe?
What to do? Still at this point, it hadn't hit me. But all of us girls get into the car afterwards.
At this point, you hadn't heard a...
Yeah. We get into the car afterwards and are heading off sharing stories and we all realize she's a madam. She was a madam. The dude thinks that I'm a prostitute.
Mm-hmm. That's something we could revisit in your career as well, isn't it?
Oh, it was revisited when we did the EMAs. Borat is hosting at this point. We've done this whole video of our entrance to stage. We have in-ears in. We don't know what's being said out there. He introduced us as the 6 most famous prostitute from America. And we didn't know that he had said this. So we come out like, yeah, we are so ready to perform. How embarrassing.
It's all right. Nobody was watching.
No, nobody watches the EMA. It's fine.
You'll be fine.
I think our management didn't let him into our after party afterwards.
Oh, I bet he was gutted.
I'm gutted. I mean, Sacha Baron Cohen.
Yeah, fair enough. But he's funny. Bring him in.
He's being a character. Doesn't really mean it.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, when I left home, there was this, you know, there was this moment where I could hear my family talking about the only thing as a dancer I would turn into moving to LA as a prostitute. And there I am having these moments, you know, this whole time, always making sure I keep everything covered, keep it classy, keep it contemporary, ballet-like.
And on the biggest stage.
Constantly being referred to as a prostitute.
Brilliant.
It's great.
And
loved
there's
it.
The headline. Episode 3, I am a prostitute.
No, but I'm not. I'm really not.
Seriously, guys, I'm not.
I promise. No matter how many times people say it, I'm not.
Okay, we've got some headlines. They're all based on money, obviously, because this is an episode about money.
Yes.
Yeah.
Show me the
so
money.
So blank sends message to I'm a celebrity bosses. Show me the money. And that's in the Metro, September 22.
Oh, it's got to be somebody that doesn't need it.
Deck.
Do you think?
Ant or deck.
No, they host it. They would.
Yeah, they want more money. The greedy little Geordies.
I could never say anything bad about
them.
No,
they're both
two.
So lovely.
I don't know.
Who would you?
I mean,
it could be you.
I probably
genuinely
have said
be,
that.
I don't think you've said that, but that is what your response would be.
That's my response every time a manager asks me to do
so
it.
So that's a certain thing. Like what you do a reality show, but it has to be something you really want to do. If it's not something you really want to do, they better show you the money.
Yeah, I don't want to find myself on a again because that was horrific.
Was that the worst thing you've ever done for money?
Worst thing I've ever done for money.
Brilliant.
So who said show me the money?
I didn't see the headline. I'm saying you. Kimberly Wyatt.
It wasn't me.
You would totally have forgotten that you've said it as well.
Not me, is it?
Oh, Lewis Capaldi. He'd be good on it, but he doesn't need to do it, does he? He doesn't need to do it. Like, you have to need to do shows like this or really want to do shows like this. If you don't really, like, you really wanted to do The Jump, you really wanted to do MasterChef to learn to cook because there's something in it.
Yeah.
But if you don't really want to do this, it has to be about money.
Or like Dancing on Ice. I didn't really ultimately want to do the show. I was so scared of getting injured. But then a cancelled world tour.
Cancelled world tour. A cancelled play.
A surprise baby. A
surprise baby.
Put you in a position of like, COVID, right, let's strap on those blades and see what we can do.
Let's dance on this for a change. Yeah. You have to do that every now and then. That's the way it is.
Blank retires with $1 billion in career earnings.
In career? You worked in Korea?
Career earnings.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I was like, they don't have dollars
retires
in career.
Retires with $1 billion.
When was it?
It was in the National, September 2022.
Oh. So that wouldn't be, I was going to say it might be Tyson Fury.
But there was that guy that was a billionaire that retired and was going to give the rest of the earnings to a charity to help climate change.
Yeah, that wasn't.
That's not it, is
that
it?
That wasn't.
That's not the one.
That wasn't a famous person. No. Who was it again? It was Patagonia's founder.
Oh, yeah.
He's famous now, but he wasn't famous then. I doubt it would have.
Definitely one of my favorite headlines, though. But who's retired with $1 billion in career earnings?
Was Kanye said he's retiring?
Nah.
Apparently he's got more than that anyway.
Never. Those Yeezys will keep on keeping
on. He's never going to stop, is he?
Nah.
The Patagonia founder probably be my only.
We're going to go with the Patagonia founder.
Oh, no way.
Max Rogers. It's Federer.
It's so obvious, isn't it? Actually, I wouldn't have said he'd earned $1 billion. That is amazing that he's earned $1 billion.
Branding gigs.
Branding deals. Definitely. Branding deals, that's where the money is. By the way, what we can learn from this is that branding deals are where the money is.
Blank, surrounded by obsessed friends who use her for money as she pays for everything.
It's in OK Magazine, September 22. That's a bit harsh. Whose friends are surrounded? They're obsessed friends who use her for money. I don't know who's worse. She's calling her friends obsessed.
No, but maybe she's not. That's just what the OK
magazine
is
saying. Oh, what
OK
are saying. That's right, OK. So her friends are obsessed with her.
Whose
friend,
who do we see in the limelight that has obsessed friends using?
I thought you said, who do we know that we're obsessed with that's got lots of money? She's obviously top of the tree.
I feel like it might be a reality star.
Yeah? Oh, I wasn't going there, but yeah, OK. I was thinking
like a Towie
or something.
Or a Love Island or a...
Okay.
Who is it? It was just on the cover of Fabulous and was like the top earning reality star.
I am low on the reality TV knowledge. Everyone I've ever met from reality TV has always been really lovely, but I don't watch those shows.
I'm just going to throw a wild one out there.
Go for it.
Mara Eccleston. I don't even know if she's from reality TV.
Definitely not her, but go on.
But I just know she's got a lot of money. She's always on Hello or whatever.
She's talking about her
talking about her lavish lifestyle.
Okay. Tamara Eccleston.
Oh, it's Katie Price.
Oh, it's Katie Price.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, no, I can see why they... Yeah, I could have got there. I understand how they wrote that headline. Yeah.
Totally knew it.
Totally knew that. With hindsight, I'd have done great on this.
You knew Kate at one point, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
Pull yourself together.
Yep.
And tell me what you have learned.
What have I learned? I've learned that branding deals are where the money's at, no matter what you do.
Yeah.
You start off working for free if you want a longevity career. Do all the fun stuff then. Make money later. It's good for you to have a person in charge of your finances. And you don't know who is.
I do now. I'm talking about then.
Yeah, you had to go to his house to meet.
It wasn't at his house. It was the lavish Evian water gold dripping space.
What have you learned?
You know, it takes me back to one of the fan questions.
Yeah.
From Emma.
Yeah.
And she's
Emma Cook.
Yeah.
Thanks, Emma.
Thank you. And it was talking about how much, you know, will you change your core values for money?
Right.
And I think what I've learned over the years is that a lot of what we've chatted about is about balance, isn't it? It's about knowing who you are, what your passions are about, and chasing that. It's all about talent and what you do, right?
Yeah.
But there's also this balance of being able to support a family, live a life, have a career.
And know that money is important to a certain extent, enough that you have enough to be able to do the things you want to do. And then it becomes the least, it's the least important thing, but it's not important.
That's it. So it's like, you know, sustainability means so much to us. Our whole life is based on hopefully one day creating a sustainable home. But the more we really put our morals and our choices within sustainability,
the more money we need to do it.
And less we worked, the more money we needed to make to attain it. And you sort of realize, like, as much as I want to, you know, put my whole hat on sustainability, I still have to earn money. And the like going out and earning money means pushing people to buy more stuff if you're doing a branding deal. It means wearing really great clothes every time you go places because the way that you look, your image is such a huge part of your build as a famous person, as a someone that makes money. So there does come down to a bit of a balance.
So to sum up and wrap up, we'll go back to the initial question. Are famous people rich?
So we don't get private healthcare.
No.
We don't get pension.
Nah.
We don't necessarily get any kind of career security whatsoever.
No.
But
if you go to Thorpe Park, you can jump to the front.
The perks are outstanding.
Yeah. So I think fame brings you perks mostly.
Yeah, it does. It does bring you. And
it puts
true.
You in the running for branding deals.
Yeah.
And puts you in the running for hopefully some really great work that's going to pay off and give you rain down. It's going to rain.
And we can.
In abundance.
Although we have no experience, maybe we'll get someone on who has experience of the smash and grab effect.
Yeah.
We can recommend the longevity effect, which involves making smart decisions with good advice and good management so that you can create some sort of longevity and have some sort of future planned. Because if you do, because it can end tomorrow, you can make a lot of money tomorrow on a branding deal, but that is effectively from that day on, you're unemployed until the next one comes along.
Or, this is a true story, a friend can go to a psychic. That psychic can say that she just did the Michael Jackson case after he died and she's been in touch with him. Michael will come down and tell her to tell the rest of the girls to do a forensic audit on the label. And once that audit has happened, maybe you'll find some money.
And none of that is made up.
Thank you for listening to this week's The Fame Game. Now, before you go, make sure to hit subscribe or follow, and that means you're first to know of next week's episode.
What my wonderful wife actually means is thank you for listening to So You've Decided to Become Famous. You can also let us know you liked it by rating 5 stars, leaving a lovely review, or by sharing with a friend.
You can follow us at Kimberly Wyatt and at Max Rogers UK. See you next time.
Insanity Group.